Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and we're delighted to have you with us today. Today we're going to talk about metabolic disorders that occur in babies, and they're actually not very rare, but each one of them is rare. There are some 60 or more enzymes involved in breaking down our foods and getting them to the right places to do the right things in our bodies. And if any one of those enzymes is not present or is in short supply, then things can go wrong. So we're going to talk about one of them today. But as I said, there are many. So that's why I put on the title that it's metabolic disorders in general. Some of them are called lysosomal storage disease, and I won't go into detail on the program, but I did put some written information with the program on the website. So if you are in a situation of dealing with one of these metabolic disorders or lysosomal storage diseases or glycogen storage diseases, please listen up. I hope that you will benefit from the conversation. So we have today with us Christy Betney from Maine, and I will let her tell you her story. Welcome, Christy.
Thank you, Joyce. My name is Christy, and I have a 15-month-old daughter, Mackenzie, and she was diagnosed at 6 weeks old with Pompe disease. Currently, Maine does not screen for Pompe disease on our newborn screening. However, we had taken Mackenzie to the doctors when she was 6 weeks old to have her be checked out for poor feeding. And while we were in the doctor's office, things were going quite well. We were discussing upping her formula to a higher calorie and to work on her suckle. Then the doctor needed an oxygen level read, and that was when we started to have issues. Then nursing assistant was trying to get a read on her little tiny toe, and it wasn't quite working out so well. And after about 10 minutes or so, they realized that machine was working right, but Mackenzie's oxygen level was very low, and it was in the low 80s, and that was when we were rushed to the emergency room. She had a chest x-ray done, and then we were shipped off to the big hospital here in our state, Maine Medical Center, where she was admitted for about a week. She undergoes a bunch of testing, and that was how we manifested to getting the confirmed diagnosis of Pompe disease in the infantile form for Mackenzie.
So, Christy, let me ask you a question. You mentioned the newborn screening, and that's when they take a drop of blood from the newborn baby, usually from their foot, and put it on a little card and send it in for testing. And they do screen, as they say, you know, just look through those to see if there are indications that certain diseases might be present. And there's a whole long list of things that they do screen for, some of which are metabolic disorders, but Pompe is not on that list. Did I get that right?
Yeah, so every state has their own list of diseases that they test for with newborn screening. And like you said, they prick the baby's foot and put a drop of blood on that card, and they send it out to a lab to test for specific markers for possible diseases that the child might have. Each state tests for their own list of diseases that they test for, and that all goes through legislation and stuff like that. Maine has around 20, if I remember correctly, like 28 or like 32 that we test for,
right.
And Pompe is not on our newborn screening here in our state of Maine, no.
Right. So this always, every state does their own sort of cost-benefit analysis, if you will, because many of these conditions that they're checking for are things that if the infant is treated rapidly, that they can kind of normalize their progression. But if they're not identified and not treated at a very early stage, then there can be very bad consequences like deafness or mental retardation or, in fact, death. So they're trying to find these things early. Part of the problem these days is we've identified so many more conditions that it's getting to be pretty hard to keep up with it all. And so there's actually a field testing of whole genome screening that's being done at a number of hospitals in the United States to see if we want to check for everything and let the computer tell us, you know, what sort of flagged. And of course, that's just an indication. It's not a definitive diagnosis. Then the doctors need to go back and check and make sure that that indicator was in fact pointing to the right thing. But it is a way of trying to identify and help the babies who need this help as early as possible.
Which is so key, Joyce, because early detection is so important, so that way treatment can be started as soon as possible to give these children the quality of life that they deserve.
So you mentioned that she wasn't feeding as well as you had hoped when you went in for that examination. That was
correct,
the primary.
Yeah.
Was it failure to thrive, or it was just what you perceived as a feeding issue?
She was eating, but she wasn't eating what she typically was taking in for an input the week prior. So she was normally drinking X amount of bottles, and I think that she was drinking like half of that by the time I brought her. So I noticed her declining with her eating, and it started to worry me. And I'm a new mom, and she's my first child. I took her in immediately to, you know, make sure that everything was okay.
Okay, great. And that was certainly the right thing to do. And then they noticed that her blood oxygen levels were markedly low, enough that they thought the machine was malfunctioning.
Yeah, we live in rural Maine, so our local hospital, which is only a mile from our house, is very older and not up to date, I would say. So the equipment isn't the greatest, and they actually thought the batteries were dying and that maybe it just wasn't working right. But come to find out, it was, and her oxygen level was around 82, 83. So they knew something was wrong.
So then they rushed her into the emergency room, and what happened next?
So they did a chest x-ray at the local emergency room that we were at, because our pediatrician's office is hooked to the hospital. So we were pretty much just taken down the hall to the emergency room, and they did a chest x-ray there and put oxygen on her and prepped her for the transport, which is about an hour drive to the big hospital right here in Portland, Maine, which is Maine Medical Center. And then when we got to Maine Medical Center, she underwent an EKG, an echocardiogram, and that was when we realized that her heart was enlarged, and she was admitted to the Barbara Bush floor, which is the children's pediatric floor, for a week.
So I did a little bit of reading on this, and it sounds like the enlarged heart is a fairly typical first diagnosis of the condition. And it probably means that the heart is just having to work very hard trying to pump enough blood to the lungs to pick up oxygen and not succeeding in doing that. Is that more or less right, or what else would cause that heart to enlarge?
Yeah, so most patients who have Pompe disease have cardiomyopathy, which is the heart enlargement, and they also tend to have an enlarged liver. So it's the heart and the liver that are the main organs that tend to malfunction with Pompe disease. And what happens is with the glycogen storage disorder, which is Pompe disease, they can't break down the sugar. So they don't produce the enzyme that allows them to break down complex sugars within their body. So the sugars will attach themselves to their muscles and their organs. So pretty much in a sense, the sugars had attached themselves to Mackenzie's heart and made this thick wall around her heart of all sugar that just wasn't breaking down, which was causing it to be so large. It was actually her chest wall. That's how big it was.
Wow. So one of the things that I've noticed about many of these diseases is that the baby tends to start out looking great and then, as you observed, begin to decline at a certain point.
Yes.
And it's due to this buildup of these residues that the lysosomes are supposed to take all these residues, the leftover bits after the normal processing is complete, usually get broken down and disposed of in the normal course of events. But if one of these components is not getting disposed of, then it builds up and begins to cause problems in the body. And as you said, this is the sugar in this case.
Right.
So then what happens? Now it's a matter of how are we going to treat her? How are we going to take care of her? And what is her prognosis? What's her future likely to be? So tell me what happened at that point.
Yeah, so we were admitted to the hospital for a week, and she underwent a ton of testing. We tested her for everything underneath the sun. And they definitely knew that something was wrong, but they were just trying to pinpoint what it was. And it all started out with Mackenzie's father discussing with me a possible child that he had also had before we had met, and that child got extremely sick as well. And that baby ended up passing away, and he was unsure if the child was his, but that baby ended up having Pompe disease. And while we were at the hospital, I reached out to that child's mother to ask questions in regards to what the baby had for a disease and what happened, which caused her death, and that was when she mentioned Pompe. So at that point, we had met a bunch of different doctors and geneticists, and the doctors started already throwing out that name of Pompe disease. So it had been already a name that I had heard of from the doctors, and then when I heard this other woman say that this possible child to Mackenzie's father, which is her possible half-sibling, passed away from Pompe disease, it was very clear to me that we really needed to have that test done immediately to make sure that that's, you know, not what it is or what it is, so that way we can go forward with trying to treat Mackenzie. So they did a blood test and a muscle biopsy and sent it off to Duke University in North Carolina, and that's when, about a week later, we were sent to home for Thanksgiving and told that we would get a phone call when the test results came back to confirm or not if Mackenzie did in true have infantile Pompe disease. And with there being a definite possibility of her having a half-sibling that also had Pompe disease, it was put on rush order pretty much to get that test result back so we could go forward, seeing that we are speaking about genetics and that likelihood is just so high that that's probably what the issue was.
Right.
So
they have to be sure that they've identified the correct missing enzyme in order to treat it properly, because if they don't get to exactly the right one, they could do the wrong thing for her, right?
Exactly, yes. So the treatment plan for a Pompe patient is enzyme replacement therapy. And I'm going to backtrack for just a minute here, but infantile Pompe disease is there's three different forms of Pompe. There's infantile form, then a juvenile form, and then an adult onset form. So the infantile form you're born with, and it's present from birth. And then juvenile and adult onset, those don't show symptoms until later on in life, and then it manifests from there. So the infantile form, which is a form that Mackenzie does have, that form is the most dangerous, and it's fatal. Pompe itself is fatal, but for infants that have Pompe disease, if they do not receive this treatment, which is called enzyme replacement therapy, also what we call just ERT, they will most likely pass away before their first birthday from cardiac heart failure. So it's extremely important for ERT to be started as soon as possible within these infants to make sure that they, you know, sustain life. So Mackenzie was started at 8 weeks old with ERT, and that pretty much is what has saved her life. So she has a port, and she receives these treatments currently biweekly, and it takes about 6 hours from start to finish for her to actually get the medication. And she's hooked up to an IV, and it's hooked up to her port, and she gets that every other week. And it's the enzyme that her body doesn't produce that they're giving her, so she can break down those sugars.
Great.
So over the course of about after around 4 months of receiving the ERT treatment, we actually started to see improvement with her heart. So it was evident that it was working, which was wonderful. And over time, her heart has gone down, and currently it's actually at the normal size that it should be. So it's doing a great job at really breaking down those sugars. So it really has been a miracle.
That's great. So now she's thriving and moving around and really progressing pretty much normally?
Yeah, so she's hitting all of her milestones. She is currently 15 months, but she's eating great. She was on oxygen for the first 5 months of her life almost, and that was 24/7. And then oxygen was only used at nighttime. And now at this point, oxygen is only used as needed. And she actually really hasn't used oxygen in quite a while. But when she gets a cold, she needs the oxygen. When she gets sick, you know, she has a harder time breathing than most normal children, so she does need it at that point, too. And she, other than that, though, she's a normal, typical baby, and looking at her, you wouldn't know anything was wrong unless you knew the story. She's pulling herself up. She's cruising furniture. She's almost walking. She's crawling all over the place. She can crawl to the middle of the floor and stand up to a standing position on her own. She's talking and getting into lots of mischief, and she's full of life and has quite an amount of energy. Sometimes I don't know where she gets it from.
Oh, that's wonderful.
She's doing absolutely wonderful. And it definitely is a big step forward, because we really did not know where life was going to take us when we got the diagnosis. I mean,
Getting
told your newborn has a very rare and fatal genetic disorder, and then you go and Google it or try to, you know, research it to learn more about it, and you're faced with all of these horrific stories. And
yeah.
You know, children that, you know, we've lost because of Pompe, and how difficult their life is going to be, and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
We really hadn't known what to expect. and we didn't know if she was on walk or any of those things. But she definitely is going to be walking soon, and she's just doing wonderful things.
That's great. I wanted to go over the sort of medical doctor journey that you went through, because I think this is not unusual here in the United States. Some people live in big cities like Boston where there's everything medically you could hope for, but a lot of people do live in rural areas with hospitals that are great for the ordinary diseases, but when you come up with a rare disease, they're like clueless. And so, but they seem to have escalated this in a very orderly way. So I was really glad to hear that part. Would you share some of that with us?
Sure. So we do live in rural Maine. When Mackenzie was first diagnosed, we found out that Mackenzie currently is the only child in our state with infantile Pompe disease. There are a few of the adult onset patients for Pompe. There's about 5 or 6, but they actually don't always live in Maine year round. A lot of them fly south for the winter. They like the warm climate. But Mackenzie's the only child in the state of Maine. So when she was diagnosed, we were referred to a cardiologist, a pulmonologist, obviously genetics. And then we had, PT, speech, and occupational therapy, and all of those services as well. But nobody up here knew what Pompe disease was at all, besides our genetic doctor. So going to appointments was extremely frustrating and very scary, because every time that we went to an appointment, usually the first line out of anybody's mouth were, "So tell me, what is Pompe disease? Can you explain what your daughter has for a disorder?" And that was so frustrating as a parent, because you're going to a doctor to get help, but yet they don't even know what your child has for a disease. So that right there alone was extremely frustrating and made us feel very secluded. We felt very alone. And then I actually started reaching out online and using, Facebook and other social media to hook up with other families and other parents with children with Pompe. And that has made a world of a difference. We actually went to Boston as well, to Boston Children's Hospital, to have Mackenzie looked at down there to see if maybe they had more education, more information about Pompe than people up here clearly did not have. And although they have seen it a few more times, they still were not as educated about the disease as much as we would have hoped for either. So that was hard too, making the trip to Boston thinking it's a bigger place, it's a big city, they'll know more than up here, and we still didn't know as much as we had hoped.
How did you get referred to Duke? Because for as with so many rare diseases, there may be one center of expertise in the country, maybe one center of expertise in the world, and in this case, it's Duke. So how did you wind up at Duke in North Carolina?
Okay, yeah. So Duke was brought to our attention when Mackenzie was first hospitalized. So her blood test and muscle biopsy was sent to Duke. And I remember going in for the first initial genetic appointment after Mackenzie was diagnosed to discuss treatment. And I remember sitting there talking with our genetic doctor, and we had a block of like a 2-hour block appointment. And I think that right there was like the initial shock factor that, okay, we're in for the long haul. And now, we got to deal with this head on. But it was kind of a scary thing because, having a 2-hour doctor appointment scheduled, something's going on. And she walked in with this huge stack of papers And I remember her saying, I hope you don't get your hand, I hope your hand doesn't fall asleep by the end of this, but I have a ton of paperwork that you have to sign. And I was like, oh boy. And it was like signing a mortgage. It was really that much paperwork. And it was all over treatment and getting her into the study to get the medicine to, you know, make sure that she, you know, stays alive and all of that stuff. And it was just amazingly overwhelming. But then we did a teleconference call with a doctor at Duke University. And that was kind of when I realized that Duke was that place. That was the expert. That's where all of, like, the research was going on at. And that was where most of the education was coming from on Pompeii. And then when I had reached out to families on social media, that was when I learned more about how significant and important Duke actually it was going to be to us and Mackenzie. That was when I realized that Duke definitely is the place and they're full of expertise on Pompeii, and that was where we needed to go. Then I actually spoke to a mom who lives in North Carolina, and her daughter is 12 and has Pompeii. And she had mentioned to me that they do these conferences every year, and families can go down and see all of the specialists that you see typically, like I had mentioned before, genetics, pulmonary, cardiology, PT, speech therapy, OT, dietitian, all of those specialty doctors. But the doctors at Duke see Pompeii patients almost daily. So they know what they're doing. So we actually fundraised and we got help from New England Regional Genetics Group and got a scholarship so we could attend this conference. And it was absolutely phenomenal. We went from feeling so alone and feeling like we were so secluded to being in a spot where it was like 1,000 bricks was lifted off my chest because I felt so at home and I felt like we were in the right spot. And I knew that at that point we were doing everything that we needed to do to ensure Mackenzie had the best treatment options and the best quality of life that she could have.
Great. Oh, that's wonderful. I'm so glad things are going well for her, and I hope that that continues. You mentioned that some people aren't even diagnosed until they're adults.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different forms of it, like I had mentioned before. And those people, there's the juvenile onset and then adult onset. And in those people, they technically have it their whole life. However, they just don't show symptoms or signs of it until later on.
So the accumulation must be slower in them.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think that that's how it works. I really don't know too much about those two forms of it because Mackenzie doesn't have that form. But I'm sure that that's part of why it doesn't manifest until later on in life.
Right, and this enzyme replacement therapy that she's undergoing is still in clinical trials. It's a research study. Is that true?
I know that they are doing another study to make a new form of it. I would have to really look into that a little bit more, Joyce.
Okay.
I really don't want to comment on that just because in case I get it wrong.
That's fine, sure. But it, just so that other families know, there are not enzyme replacement therapies for all of these conditions yet. There's a lot of research going on, but it's worthwhile to reach out and see if there's anything in early studies or trials, because even though we don't yet know that these work, without treatment, these children are not going to do well at all. And with, if we get the right treatment, they could live a relatively normal life. So we have to work with the research teams that are developing these enzyme therapies to connect the patients with the research and see if we can make some progress on this.
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate your willingness to share your story. And thanks, everybody in the audience, for listening with us. And we hope that you'll be with us again next week. The Powerful Patient has had a bit of a hiatus, but we're back in action and hope that everyone has a great 2017. And be well and be a powerful patient. Thanks so much.
Thank you.